The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Wednesday, Gary, how are you? Are you drunk?
I should be.
Let's go get drunk.
Would you know the difference?
I don't know.
Al?
No.
Nobody knows. Nobody
depends
would.
On if I were drunk or not.
No, nobody cares and probably can't tell the difference, but both you and I under the weather, so
yeah.
It's going to be a fun show.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether it's the dust storm or a combination of the dust storm that we had and all those particles that were in the air.
Well,
or a combination of that and allergies and a cold or whatever.
Right. It's like, well, what scares me is that they keep talking flu. You know, I was in down at our flagship station this morning at WBAP, and they said a couple of people have been out with the flu.
Oh, no.
Down there.
I had my shot.
Yeah, I did too. I got mine like back in late September or something.
Well, it got to the point, it was about 2 o'clock this afternoon, and I'm thinking to myself, I may not be able to make it in. I had a real bad sore throat, and you know, you get to the point of a sore throat where you say, uh-oh, and I have worked with bad sore throats before.
Yeah.
So, you know, just kept, you know, drinking water and was on just the regular over-the-counter cold medicine, as I am right now, so not the nighttime stuff. I want to make that clear.
Right.
And then the supervisor for the company that did the outside painting, I had a bunch of outdoor painting done on my house. But I found out it was after 12 years in the Texas heat, you have to redo it again.
Yeah.
And so it was a pretty major job. It took, you know, 2 days to do it. And so the funny thing is they actually came out. They finished on Sunday. So then yesterday comes along. Now, I know they come out, you know, the sales guy, supervisor comes out, the project manager, sales guy comes out, and, you know, after they're done, walks you around the house before they actually charge you. But Monday went by, and I'm like, okay, they must be very busy. And then it's like, okay, will they call me today? I mean, this is a little bit of money. And they did. And then he came, great guy. I mean, just a great guy, Javier. And we've had two great talks. And so he came over, we walked around, and I knew him. It was a great job to begin with, but we just, you know, started talking again, as we do about everything, just everything in life. And it was a great conversation. I realized I had talked for 45 minutes. And I went, oh. And I'm like, my throat doesn't hurt. Now I know I can go into work. So that's when I knew at that point. I said, after I sleep and everything else. And I did, when I woke up, it was still a little, it's good now. And I'm mentally feeling really good because it sits in the back of your mind. Okay, let's get all the painting done. We had a lot of rain, so it took like a week to get it all done.
Yeah, and now we got more rain coming in.
Yeah, I know.
Thank goodness, in time.
Just in time. But we got a great show ahead. I mean, there's just so much going on. I mean, what an insane day. I did figure this out yesterday, though. When you think about the three biggest topics that are out there right now, issues.
Yep.
Illegal immigration, infanticide, and the Green New Deal. I started, you know, you and I talked about the response on social media over the last couple of weeks. Are people really defending those issues? Now, today, for example, you had, because of Cohen's testimony later on today, that's what Democrats were attempting to talk about. And I understand why. Politically, it's the only thing that you have right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get to that. We'll get to that coming up a little bit later on. This is just, you know, what are people debating out there? But whether it was Harris or Booker or whomever has already announced that they're running for president, when they brought up the infanticide bill, this is on their Twitter feeds.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Harris. I went through, I said, let me just use her as an example. And I went through probably 100 of the first ones that came, 100. I mean, I went through 100 different tweets and looked. And then I randomly did it again, went through another 100, then probably, I'm guessing, estimated another 100, then probably another 50 random again. Now, she got thousands of responses. I didn't find one that supported her. Mm. Not one. the only thing that you could get was a guy who said, well, look, I'm pro-life, but let's be honest here, this is all about politics. And I went, well, then you're not pro-life.
Yeah.
It was a guy who realized, uh-oh, how do I get involved in this? Okay, I am pro-life, but this is all about politics. And if you think about the Green New Deal, and especially those two topics, infanticide, the killing of children, or the Green New Deal, what is the biggest argument the Democrats have right now? Well, the Republicans are only bringing it up because of politics. It's just politics. It's all politics, and we're sick of politics. Isn't it amazing that in the political arena of politicians that are elected by the people of the United States to represent those people and promote their issues that they truly believe in, that when they bring it up for a vote, they're accused of politics, which is exactly the reason that they are in Washington, D.C., because they are in the business of politics. Mm-hmm. And the biggest argument coming from Democrats is that this is unacceptable because it's politics. No blank Sherlock. Mm.
The dismissive attitude of so many right now on the left, I mean those on Capitol Hill, has been, I think, is really getting them in trouble. And you know what's interesting is that, thinking about Bill Maher's comments on Friday, I mean, it's not a narrative. You know, a narrative is when, all right, we're going to make the same points over and over again on whatever issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same, I guess, line of defense or whatever it is that they're dealing with. And they all kind of get in lockstep. That's not a narrative. The ideas expressed by Bill Maher, and everybody says, oh, you're just taking him way too seriously. He's just a late night comedian. No.
No. No, it's a political show.
He makes comments. Yeah. On social issues, and that was supposed to be observational humor, which is based in truth, and this is what he's always done.
By the way, that response makes our point.
Yes.
The fact that you can't argue the point that he's making, mm-hmm. it's just that we're taking him too seriously on his point. When that's the only argument that somebody has,
yeah.
you realize at that point that you have won. They're talking about the intent of the person saying it and your intent or your mood responding back instead of the substance of the argument that he is giving, whether he believes it's part comedy or not. And we took that into consideration
mm-hmm.
and said, even if it is part comedy, which, of course, his show is a political show.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
He injects humor into it. But as we said, humor has to be even based. The funniest humor is based on things that you can look at and say part of it is true. It is based on a truth, and what he said wasn't based on a truth. But I just want to bring that up because whenever that argument's brought up,
yeah.
you guys are taking it too literally to what he said. Well, yeah, then you know you've got a weak argument when that's your argument.
Exactly. And you know, the other side is that it is based in his observation. You know, that's his view of people in what he calls the passed over states. That's how he thinks of mm-hmm. those people.
Yeah, it's true.
And that is exactly what we were dealing with in 2016, before 2016. But remember the day after, for about 5 minutes, when you had so-called journalists saying, we need to go to the heartland more. The problem is we're not connecting with real Americans. They came back from lunch and said, oh, wait a minute, never mind.
The problem is we didn't insult them enough.
Well, and that's, and this is it. We said then, and really it wasn't any huge prediction because it was obvious that it's not going to change. It didn't. It got worse, as we said it would. They're proud of thinking that way. They're proud of thinking that way, that people in the heartland are jealous of them because Wolfgang Puck makes their food. That's absurd. That's absurd. That's
you're
the
right.
elitist
it's,
attitude.
The, even the analogy, he's thinking up the analogy.
Right.
You know, the funny thing is, I was, it's funny because I heard the other day, I was just going through stuff, and I don't know why it came up in Google, but it came up one of Dennis Miller's old, stand up bits.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really impressed because when he makes those analogies, which he does all the time, they were really good.
Yeah,
and they were,
right.
And I sat there and went, wow, that's based on truth. That's why that's funny. Because you and I, because we dabbled in comedy, we're, you know, it's something that we've studied before. And, you know, how do people actually make jokes? How do they construct jokes? How do they relate back, to it? Is the joke based on just insulting the other side that you disagree with? Or are you actually making salient points that are based partially in truth, which makes the joke funny to begin,
right.
Then makes the joke funny
right.
when you make the analogy.
Right. And you take the comments by Bill Maher. I won't call them jokes because I didn't think they were funny. I think before it becomes, somebody laughed at it, obviously, in the audience. People were laughing at it. But in my mind, it's not a joke until I laugh at it. So, and the idea, and Bill Maher can be funny. He's right. been funny before, but none of those points were funny.
Yeah, but that was when he was on Married with Children. And that
yeah,
was a
right.
heck of a, that was 25, 30 years ago.
Yeah. So
that was a long time ago.
You know what's interesting is that when he snaps out of it, comedians in cars getting coffee, when he was on and he was talking about how ridiculous it is that, the left walks on eggshells when they're talking about terrorists. They're afraid of offending terrorists. And he made that comment, and I thought,
that's funny.
That's funny, and it's true.
You can say at the minimum it's partly based in reality.
Yes.
Not all Democrats, but
right.
some Democrats, they tiptoe around it so much. Right. You think of the former attorney general. Remember when he would not say Islamic terrorism?
And I
remember that.
Yeah, and I think I'll have to go back and watch it again. I think that's what Bill Maher was referring to.
Okay.
I think he was referring to that. He said they won't even say that because they're afraid of offending terrorists,
yeah.
which is ridiculous. It was one of those points where I thought, okay, he's being intellectually honest. And he a couple of times has gone after the left. What's different is that in that, you're talking about public service. If indeed the point is about they won't say this phrase that phrase,
right.
those are public servants. When you're talking about the people in the flyover states, it shows you're clueless about who they are.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it showed to me was the ignorance when he was trying to make the point that people in the heartland, people in red states, that their true motivation is that they're jealous of the lifestyle of people in red state, that the people in red states are jealous of the lifestyle mm-hmm. and the riches and the food and the houses and the economic activity that's going on in the blue states.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the only thing that was laughable was it was so wrong.
Right. Exactly.
And it wasn't based in any type of reality.
Well, where's poverty the highest?
California.
Blue state.
Yep.
And why is that?
Well, and you and I always go through the GDP of the states. You know, we do that a couple times of the year. We go through
right.
the GDPs and every like 4 months or so we update just because we think it's interesting for people to know
mm-hmm.
what part of the country is doing great. And if you look at some state like New York or California, they have been lagging behind over the, if you go the last 10 years and look at their economic growth as opposed to states that have more free market principles, they do lag behind.
Yeah. And of course, the cost of living.
The cost of living, too. Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
the U.S. Great. Census Bureau finally, rearranged. They reset their standards in terms of poverty because it's not about you had said this for years before they actually changed their policy on determining what qualifies as poverty, and it's not about what you make, it's about what you make in relation to what you spend.
Right.
And the cost of living is astronomical. I had a friend that told me, living out there, he loves California, and he's lived out there for years, but living out there is so difficult because everything is so
expensive.
Expensive.
Yeah. 86, we got a great show ahead. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning. Thanks so much for being here this morning. We've got so much to cover. The House passes the bill to block the president's border emergency as GOP senators pounce on Pence. All right, I had to say that. But they did yesterday. We'll get to that. President Trump in North Korea, what he said yesterday that brings up some questions. Where is the China deal going? Can Democrats defend any of the major issues out there? You know, on border security, they will debate the national emergency portion of it. But on the substance of the actual issue about border security, about sanctuary cities, they will do everything. They will run away from actually debating those particular points. And we have talked about the major issues out there, the other major issues. The infanticide issue, the Green New Deal, they're just running from it. I did see the other day that the energy level of Republicans and conservatives, you know, that they look at political energy,
right,
is much greater right now. And I was just asking you during the break, I said, you know, you and I both notice that tremendously. You still have the trolls. The professional trolls are still out there, mm-hmm, or the professional liberals. And they're not all trolls, but the professional liberals are out there and they're still speaking. But I have noticed just a tremendous decrease on social media. And I'm talking about maybe the 1,000 acquaintances that I have that probably, if you look at them, people I've known through my entire life that I know on different social media, that probably 600 to 700 of them are liberal. And they have been as silent as you can imagine the last couple of months. And I can guarantee right now they don't want to touch the infanticide issue. They don't want to touch the Green New Deal. And you look at that, and we talk about political intensity and political excitement. Now, it's way, 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 way too early to be speculating how this will affect, you know, when it comes to 2020, because we don't know what will happen between now and then. But when you have the major issues of the day, and by the way, infanticide is no small issue.
No.
You know, the Green New Deal is no small issue. All right now of the Democrat candidates are behind it and support it. And so they are going to be major issues going into the rest of this year. And all of a sudden you're into 2020 and the political climate where people stand is important at that point.
Yeah, you bet. For Travel Centers of America, here's your forecast.
Most of the South that saw all that heavy rain last week will be under sunshine today, but a good portion of the South remains under the threat of some severe thunderstorms. South Texas over through Louisiana and portions of I-10 in through the Florida Panhandle will all experience continued rains today, but fortunately, we'll see the heaviest parts of the storm remain around I-10. And where that moist air meets up with cold air from the north, look for potential icing today from North Texas in through portions of western Oklahoma, parts of Kansas, northern Missouri, eastern Iowa, and northern Illinois. Shaping up to be one of the snowiest months on record for the Pacific Northwest. Portions of I-84 through Oregon will continue to see heavy amounts of snow today. Heavy snow on I-15, Helena to Salt Lake City, and in California, rain on I-5 from San Diego to San Francisco. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio, I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
they're right 100% of the time. Just ask them. Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. I want to go to The View yesterday. This is all part of our thing that on the issues. Democrats are just avoiding talking about anything right now because they can't. The latest is infanticide and the a vote that was taken the other day in the Senate. And let's go to The View.
Okay.
And it's if you saw the video of this, I mean, you look at the faces. And this is Meghan McCain talking about it. And the faces on, as they pan the faces of the other women hosts on the show, you can just tell they've got nothing. And one does try to debate, but listen to her debate points when she does. Here we go.
Punish any doctor who fails to provide medical care to a child born alive after an attempted abortion. Every single Democrat, except three of them, voted for this yesterday, including Cory Booker, Kristen Gillibrand, Kamala Harris, Amy Klobuchar, Elizabeth Warren, and Bernie Sanders. So that means these Democrats don't believe that a baby born after a botched abortion should receive medical care. Now, this is something that started with Governor Northam. Now, this is an example when we're talking about people having children and where just how extreme the left has gone. This is an example of that. And by the way, according to a Marxist poll, 80% of Americans support abortion being limited to the first 3 months of pregnancy. So if Democrats want to win an election going forward, are you going to be the party of late-term abortion? Of infanticide? Let me finish, please. Is this the platform you're going to have? Because when you're talking about children and you're talking about being pro-life, this is well out of the mainstream of where Americans are at. And when I hear AOC saying that, I actually think Cory Booker, Kristen Gillibrand, Kamala Harris, all these people, they are answering her. I believe AOC is the leader of the party. And if you think that is how you win back the White House, I'm here to tell you, I spent a lot of time in red states. I'm from a red state. That is a losing argument.
I need to push back on that. Only because...
Thank you very much,
yeah,
ma'am.
Yeah. I need to push back on that.
On the Ben Sass, born alive abortion survivor.
Yeah.
I thought you were pro-life like me.
I am. And that's why I need to push back on it. Because
you think a baby born from a botched abortion should be put down
This is why I need to push back on it. It's infanticide. Because the bill that the Senate Dems blocked yesterday was to provide medical care for infants who survived failed abortions.
Yes.
Now, one thing is,
so
it's
those
something
babies
that's
should
so
just be left to die on a table.
She's going
to
be able it's, to tell it's her something that's so extremely rare that it basically never happens.
It's not rare, in fact.
Because my sister-in-law is an OBGYN and also Catholic, so it's something that we talk about a lot.
So even though it's rare and the times that it happened, it should happen.
So we don't need a new law.
So just to let you know, that's where it was going. I mean, that was the first argument out. It's rare.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter whether it's rare.
Right.
There are a lot of things that are rare that we have laws for.
Right.
And so that was it. That it's rare. Well, it still's wrong. That's not an argument.
Right.
And when you, the other one was, well, this is simply politics, simply politics, simply politics. That's why yesterday I said, okay, I went to Kamala Harris's, Twitter page and looked on it, went through hundreds upon hundreds. I couldn't find there probably is somebody defending her. Mm. The only defense was, well, we all know this is political, but I disagree with how the Democrats are voting on this, that it is infanticide. And I'm like, wow, it was unbelievable because, as you know, you go typically to somebody's Twitter page, a politician's Twitter page, you're at least going to get half and half on a regular issue. In fact, more times you're going to get more of a majority of the people that respond to that tweet that are in favor of what the person is promoting.
Right.
And it wasn't the case. It was unbelievable. And you shake your head and you think to yourself, if they know it's a losing proposition, as we talked about Governor Northam of Virginia, when he was stating it, we're thinking to ourselves, well, you really believe this then?
Mm-hmm.
You believe that a baby should be killed outside the womb? Or that choice, if you believe in the choice of whether the baby should be killed, then you're advocating that it should be legal to be able to kill that baby out of the womb.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it. Just think. I'm sorry. You can't call Trump Hitler if you get to that point. And that's where they are. And they're only argument is, well, it's just politics, or it's rare.
You know, the whole it's rare defense is so weak, because what did we hear with the governor of Virginia? That's not what he said, and you know it. That's not what he said, and you know it. He was, ask him.
Right.
Because he was responding to a question about a bill being introduced in his state that dealt with abortions at 40 weeks. So that's how he responded to that question. You ask him what he meant. He never made it clear.
No.
So
to this day,
then,
he hasn't made it
so
clear.
So then you get to this week, and the Democrats are on record. So whatever the governor might believe, it's up to him to clarify that, not anybody else. For all the people who were trying desperately to defend him and put words in his mouth. But now, I don't even know. I think that's a moot point. We got the party on record.
Well, then the thing with Northam is the whole fact is if they were talking late-term abortions, that's not what he was talking about. And that was the entire point.
Right.
He wasn't even talking about a late-term abortion. He was talking about post-birth murder.
Right.
At that point. And I was thinking yesterday, I said, well, you're probably going to have, I was thinking when this first came up a couple of days ago, I said, well, you're going to have most Democrat senators not vote for, there's no way they can vote no on this bill. I was wrong completely. They feel that they have confidence. And I do agree with Meghan McCain on this point that, and we have said this the last couple of days, and we were criticized when we took on the statements of Ocasio-Cortez way back before she even won the election. And we said, well, the only reason we're bringing it up because you guys are bringing up somebody who really is of no importance to the Democrat Party instead of, again, discussing the substance of what she's talking about. There was the only argument that they had back then because they know they can't defend her insane ideas that you guys are making too much of it. Well, then she got elected. And then, as we said, we're only responding to the major interview she did on major mainstream liberal networks across America. They believe that she's important to do that. Therefore, if they do, we cover the major mainstream media and analyze what the politicians who go on there say.
Mm-hmm.
And so that argument was gone. Now, as we see, we were absolutely right to be monitoring what she's doing because she has become the leader. She has become the anti-intellectual leader. I was going to say the intellectual leader. I can't even say that. She has become the leader of the Democrat Party.
Yes.
It is. And if you don't believe me, look at the vote in the Senate. It's what she proposes. Meghan McCain made that too about this is all about AOC. She is the leader of the party. That's where the party is going on the Green New Deal, which would be the biggest piece of legislation in the history of the United States to transform the United States. The only way you could get there into a communist nation has been endorsed by every single Democrat who is now running for president of the United States. And Democrats have been, the rank and file Democrats have been completely quiet. And I have to ask, are you embarrassed by this? Are you looking at this and saying, wow, I can't believe that this is my party anymore? Are you quiet because you secretly agree with this? Do you agree with infanticide? Do you think that Ocasio-Cortez is Obama 2.0 and that her ideas are bold? Or do you think exactly the opposite, that these ideas being promoted by the political party that you have supported are absolutely insane?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you can still hate Trump and how he says things, and you can still look at your party and say, they're nuts.
Yeah.
And I wonder where Democrats are right now. We know where independents are. We saw where independents were going after the president gave his State of the Union address. Mm-hmm. We saw clearly where they were going. Democrats have been just as, and I'm not talking about the professional politicians or the social media trolls and political commentators out there, but even they on infanticide have been extremely quiet, and except for generalizations of Ocasio-Cortez, they don't want to, or things like, again, well, it's not legislation, it's a aspiration, but they will not talk about the ideas that she is promoting, except she means good. Nobody can talk about the substance of the ideas, of the major ideas of the Democrat Party and say those are good ideas. Why? I believe because if you're a Democrat, you know these ideas are absolutely insane. They're nuts. They're crazy. And this is not based on the attitude of a person or whether the politician lies or not or the politician is mean. These are well-defined issues and positions taken by a significant portion of the party and the party, the majority so far, in fact, all of the presidential candidates that have announced for 2020.
This
on
is,
the Democrat side.
These are the issues that define the mainstream Democratic Party today.
Yep. And I just wonder what is in the minds of Democrats right now, because that's really, to me, the great unknown. Because Democrats have gone, I'm talking about the voting, I'm talking about the people in it, and if you have friends on social media, they're staying away from these issues completely. They can't touch them. They'll still insult Trump. As I said yesterday, they're on the Cohen thing. Oh, the Cohen thing's going to get Trump now. But on the substance of the issues of their party, they are quiet. They are silent. What does that silence mean? Does it mean you agree with infanticide? Should we murder children outside the womb? Is that the official Democrat voter policy right now? Do you really believe that we should have a government that would transform the United States through communist means to a place that would cause absolute poverty and starvation worldwide? Is that seriously what you are about? Is there an evolution going on with Democrats right now? Are they looking the last couple of months and after the great victory that they believe they had in November said, oh, my God, we got what we wanted. Oh, no. Maybe we shouldn't have gotten this. We didn't know we were going to get this.
If you look at the weeks between Governor Northam and this week, it's been, what, 2-3 weeks?
Yeah.
When we say things move quickly, because what happened with the left? With Northam, they had to step out and try and defend him and put words in his mouth in doing so, which failed drastically. And now what do you have? Well, forget that. It's official with the party. The party has spoken on that same issue.
You're right. It's not just one governor anymore.
Nope. And they did not misspeak on Capitol Hill. They voted.
Right. Lines open if you want to get in. We'd love to hear from you. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio. Toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Coming up following the top of the hour, we'll get to some of your calls and comments. And also, the House passes the bill to block the president's border emergency as GOP senators apparently, as the headline says, pile on Pence. They're going to have a significant number of GOP senators. I don't know how many, but it looks like right now that will vote to block the emergency. Now, the president will veto it, but it will still send a message. How many? I don't know here at this moment. I don't know what the vote will be. So we'll get to that. The president also in North Korea. What he said yesterday that brings up some questions. What's going on in the China deal? Michael Cohen, the president's ex-lawyer, to testify in public later on today. CNN had that story that came out, you know, bold headlines and everything else. And we said, well, what does that really mean when it comes to the fact that the president knew about the WikiLeaks thing before it came out?
Right.
His response was what?
He said, wouldn't that be great?
Right.
According to the CNN report, wouldn't that be great? So what does that mean? What kind of illegal behavior would that be?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Just reading the Fox News here, the headline, Cohen to accuse Trump of knowing about Roger Stone WikiLeaks plot, but denying any direct evidence of Russia collusion. Well, the whole WikiLeaks thing, you and I went through the CNN article, and it's like, well, there's nothing there. It's what he's claiming is that Roger Stone told him, hey, WikiLeaks may have something on Hillary, right?
Right.
And
yeah.
He went, oh, okay, that'd be great.
Wouldn't that be great?
Right.
That's opposition research and opposition, anything that's going to damage your opposition, you're going to cheer. They all do it. Hillary did it. They've all done it.
And then I was reading from National Review. I was just going through David French's points that he was making. And David French is, you know, a big critic of Trump at times. And he writes, you know, as a former attorney, cooperation is the key. This is the most obvious point. It's basically the 4 points he makes are the points we make all the time. You got to follow the evidence. The evidence is what the evidence is what matters, he said, and cooperation. Of witnesses. He goes, as Cohen testifies, his credibility increases when he can support his story with documents and recordings or even other witnesses. If anyone else is willing to testify under oath in the same way to the same events, even then Cohen's words take on new importance. His narrative is only as compelling as his corroboration. Don't believe your own discernment. The absolute worst thing anybody can do when confronting a witness is to believe that they have some sort of special insight into whether who was truly sincere or credible. A man who has lied for a long time tends to be very good at lying. And the obvious giveaways or tells are more often the stuff of movies than real life. I've sat in depositions and watched a witness give a performance fit for an award season, only to see them reverse course very quickly and again convincingly after being confronted with clearly contradictory documentary evidence. Don't entirely believe arguments based on perceived incentives. I'm already hearing people say that Cohen will tell the truth tomorrow because he's trying to rehabilitate his image or because he's being an idiot to risk more jail time. Cohen is transitioning from a Trump loyalist and fixer to hero of the resistance. So there are incentives to lie or embellish. And criminals are just the kind of idiots who think that they can get away even with the same crime they've committed before. Incentives matter. But they are hardly credible and don't presume you know all the incentives in play. Uncorroborated testimony, however, isn't entirely worthless. It's likely Cohen will say a number of things that he can't immediately corroborate. That doesn't mean those statements are lies. He may well tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth, so we shouldn't discard his statements, but pay close attention. Are the uncorroborated assertions the most sensational and interesting? Then I'm dubious. Are the uncorroborated assertions consistent in tone and nature with the rest of the testimony, then I'm more curious. But no matter the nature of the testimony, file it away in your mind. Cooperation or rebuttal can come later and from unexpected sources. Given the necessity of cooperation to truly believe anything Cohen says, I'm not expecting any true blockbuster revelations tomorrow. But a blockbuster revelation is different from a blockbuster assertion. We may get one or two of those. Use caution. I expect tomorrow's testimony to produce more heat than light. Well, as look, you and I have said this already. If there are documents of, because we heard he said, you know, for example, he's got evidence for financial statements or a check, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard that he paid him money for Stormy Daniels.
Right.
Now, as we said, the thing that hurts Cohen is the fact that he's a convicted liar.
Yes.
The problem with Trump is he lied about that when he said he didn't know about the Stormy Daniel payments. We all know that. Remember, he said, well, I knew nothing about it. Cohen did that on his own. Mm-hmm. He said, no, he didn't. Nobody does that. That was immediately when he said that, that leads anybody to say, excuse me, what are you talking about? He did it out of his own pocket or out of goodwill, and you were never billed for it, and you knew nothing about it, and your attorney did something for you without your explicit permission?
Or somebody's spending your money without you knowing it?
Exactly. So as we said right there, and then we found out later on that Trump did know about it. And so that's the whole point. You've got two sides that on that particular issue have no credibility.
Mm-hmm.
Both sides have no credibility. So that's the problem that you face at, you know, at that point. But when you come to the crime, what is the crime to begin with? Not reporting a campaign donation? Maybe. If you look at John Edwards, well, no, not from the John Edwards jury point of view. So you might have a federal crime, which is viewed as a very low-level crime to begin with, that might be a campaign finance crime. Now, he says it happened during the while the president was president, which means he cut him a check during his presidency. Now, how that will be viewed overall, I don't know, and French didn't address that portion. Nobody's really addressed that portion of it. I don't know where that goes at that point. If Democrats start making, are Democrats going to say it's time to impeach based on a campaign finance violation?
Well, and how did you even, are you going to be able to qualify that, I guess, as a campaign finance violation? Because if it was paid for, And it depends, I guess, where the check came from, at which account it came from. But so far, the allegation has been that it was a gift in kind.
Right.
Something to benefit the candidate at the time, anything to benefit his campaign is considered a gift, and you can't do that.
Right.
So who made the decision for that check to be written during the campaign?
Right.
And if there was a check written after the campaign and after he became president, how does that qualify as campaign finance violation?
And if you look at the John Edwards situation, there was actually money from other people that came in to pay off.
Right.
At that point, it wasn't his own money.
Mm-hmm.
So again, the jury wouldn't convict him on that. So in kind means I use my own money to keep somebody quiet.
Mm-hmm. Or anybody, do that.
And the
effort is to protect the candidacy.
And the rest is going to be, I believe, probably uncooperated, where he says, you know, and it's not any crime. He's used racist language, racist terms, and that sort of fits. Mm-hmm. That sort of fits the sensational narrative at that point. I'm trying to get back at him because that's the narrative that the left throws at him.
Right. Yeah, that's driven. You're right. That really has only one purpose. To destroy any I guess credibility or just the image of the president, and that's exactly it serves no legal purpose, none whatsoever. But it wouldn't be happening on Capitol Hill if it weren't purely politically driven, and he'll present some facts to make it look official, or try and present some facts and say this happened. And then go on about how the president is a bad person and person and speaks this way. What I'm wondering is how mainstream America will absorb any of it. In the long line of things that have been thrown at this president, the media, every time you get to a moment like this, it's the gotcha. It's always the gotcha. And it always falls away. And why is that? Because really, there's nothing there. He's going to say the president speaks this way and has used this language and said this about people and that about people. It doesn't really go anywhere. Well, we'll go back to the Billy Bush tape. Even that wasn't enough damage to the president with female voters to the candidate at the time to end his run. Or to damage him to the point that he didn't win. My point being is that I'm not sure how much this resonates. Anything that, according to the reports, Cohen is going to testify to. Because the question would be, because it came out, Wall Street Journal and others were reporting early on Tuesday that it was going to be criminal behavior, illegal behavior, while president. The question is, all right, what is it? And then we go back to the questions about what's going to be presented financially. Financial documents, manipulating his net worth in order to avoid paying property taxes.
That narrative seemed to die down a little bit yesterday.
I hadn't heard much on it except for the Wall Street Journal. And others were looking at it too. Who else it was that did a report on it, basically bouncing off of the Wall Street Journal report and saying, keep in mind, this is one person.
Well,
that is the source.
And that's a point because we had talked about this at the last portion of the show yesterday because of that news broke from the Wall Street Journal and others around 4 a.m. Central our time. And by the time we got it and started, dissecting it, I think it was our second segment, so it was probably 25 after 4 yesterday, and we talked about it the rest of the show. But one of the things that I was trying to figure out, by the way, that the Wall Street Journal wrote it, and I think you were reading Bloomberg or something like that also.
Yeah, there was another.
Yeah, you were reading a couple of things, but I was dissecting the Wall Street Journal article, which was stating the fact of the possible crime, which was related to the Stormy Daniels payment, which we said, well, okay, that would just be an in-kind campaign contribution, which is a minor campaign law violation. I mean, it's minor. You can report it later on, and then you don't have to pay back anything because it's your money to begin with. That might be a reporting issue. And then I said, and they're not saying any other crime, and they talk about inflating, the value of inflating or deflating the value of his property. And it's like, okay, that might not be a federal law, but if he did that, that would be the big crime, because what you are implying there, or what it seemed to be implying to me, is that's tax fraud.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to me, that would be that I got you, and they didn't seem to be focusing on the issue. That was a problem that I had that I don't think I explained right by the end of the show that I had with the article, because I was in the midst of trying to digest it at that point. It was top of mind.
Yeah.
And I just went, well, wait a minute. It might not be a federal crime, but that would be definitely a state and local crime, and it would be viewed somehow as, you would view that as tax fraud.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, they never talked about the possible crime of that, which then I asked, well, then what's the point?
Right. Because
are you saying he didn't?
On that, you would also have, I would think, if you're going to make that claim, you would have financial documents that back that up.
Yeah, yeah. And it seems like the only financial document they talked then, as we get into yesterday, was
the check.
The evidence of the check to pay off Stormy Daniels.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, well, then we're not going anywhere.
Right.
Because anything else is just what you have heard, or what you claim is secondhand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, but you're right on the tax thing. That would be the big deal.
Yeah,
if you were manipulating your net worth in order to avoid paying property taxes, that's something that, you know, would be a big deal that, that clearly at somewhere at some point would be documented.
I don't have to report that I got the outside trim in my house repainted and none of the doors stained, do I?
No.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
No, you don't.
I covered that, you know, because I'm going to be getting the assessment here in the next month and a half.
Yeah.
So I don't have to report that?
No.
You're sure not? I don't want to go to jail for this.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I'm an expert and I'm a lawyer.
Can I trust you?
No.
Not only
trust
is it,
me on that.
Not only is he my co-host and my lawyer, he's my friend.
Yes. I'm the station that cares.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on DOT drug and alcohol testing. Truck drivers involved in certain crashes are required to undergo DOT post-accident tests for the presence of alcohol and/or drugs. Testing is required when the accident involves a fatality, injuries requiring immediate treatment away from the scene as well as a traffic citation for the truck driver, or a towed vehicle when a citation is issued to the truck driver. DOT rules state that as soon as possible following an accident, your employer must test for alcohol and drugs. Drivers must be tested for alcohol within 8 hours and tested for drugs within 32 hours of an accident. Remember, not submitting to a test or not being available for one within the required hours will qualify as a refusal to test, which has the same consequences as a positive test, and your employer must then remove you from the road. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Cronin. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. You know, you were making a point here, and I thought this was a really good point, about in the Wall Street Journal article yesterday that first came out about, you know, what Michael Cohen was going to say about Donald Trump and the whole thing about inflating or deflating his property's value. And you brought up the point that I protested my property tax last year and lost.
Right.
So you could say that I was attempting to deflate the value of my property, and I fought it, and they disagreed with me.
But who had the final say-so?
I don't have the final say-so.
The Central Appraisal District does.
They didn't take my word for it.
Right. The Central Appraisal District does.
Right. So what does that actually mean?
Right. I mean, you know, if he erased... because... any way you slice this, if he manipulated a number on some kind of report or something, right? If he said no, it's not this many square feet; it's only this many square feet. In any attempt of manipulation, you're essentially changing information that still ultimately has to be decided and approved by the Central Appraisal District.
Right. I can, in my mind, deflate my property as much as I want to.
Mm-hmm.
My attorneys can, my tax attorneys can, if you're using tax attorneys on that local level.
Right.
But it's the appraisal board that makes the decision.
Yes.
You can say the property is worth nothing and approach the appraisal board with that.
Right.
You're not breaking the law by doing that.
Even if we looked at amenities in the case of a billionaire, marble floors, things like that, right? The number of bathrooms in the property, or bedrooms, or square footage, or any of that. Deflating the value of a property would be instantly challenged by a Central Appraisal District, and if it's not, ultimately it would be on them. Because it says, every story says, it was an effort to avoid paying a higher property tax. But it's the Central Appraisal District in that case, within that jurisdiction, that has the final say.
And you know, I lost 2-1. One of the people agreed with me, and it was way lower than I had, and they agreed with me. The other two didn't.
You didn't give them enough money under the table.
Now, that would be against the law.
See, there.
That okay. would be against the law.
There.
Yes.
Exactly.
And it was only 100. It didn't cost me as
right.
much as I thought.
Right. Well, I mean, any way that, I mean, imagine that Trump, you know, went to the, you know, on the report or whatever it is, that was issued, went to say, no, that's not an apartment, it's a closet. Either the Central Appraisal Board went, okay, and approved it, or they would challenge it and say, yeah, we're going to need some more information, okay. like they do when yeah. you challenge your property taxes.
Well, that's maybe why they didn't say that was a legal violation.
Right. It would. It's another attempt to, again, to smear the president by Cohen.
Right.
Hours of reality every week. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90 Red Eye. Thanks so much for being here this morning. A couple of other stories out there. This statement from the president this past weekend on North Korea. I don't want to rush anybody. As long as there is no testing, we're happy. There's a interesting question as to where the president's going to go based on his statements. Mm. As you and I have talked about the whole Korea deal, we'll see.
Yeah,
it's been roughly almost a year, right?
Yeah.
That the last negotiation started. We said we're not going to know anything for 6 months to a year. We're closing in now on a year, and we're going to, I think, probably after this meeting, we're going to have an idea as to where it's going and whether the president will be successful in getting to denuclearization or a plan for that. New York Times on two stories. Seeking North Korea deal, Trump seems willing to ease U.S. demands. I don't know that. I don't know that at this time. I can't make that out of one statement, as we've said. The president says lots of things, and you look at it and you say, okay, what would... Look, here's... And I think you and I agreed on this last year. Here's the point that you want. Not that you're going to get North Korea to denuclearize. I don't believe that's going to happen. I don't believe... The president tweeted out last week that there's a great opportunity for North Korea to have a bustling, vibrant economy like we've never seen before, a great economy.
Mm-hmm.
Kim Jong-un doesn't want that. When the president tweeted that, I said, okay, I can guarantee John Bolton wasn't standing over his shoulder when he said that or when he tweeted that out. Because when you look at it, the last thing that he would want is a vibrant economy like we have or any type of westernized economy. He wants an economy good enough that will keep him in riches and him in power. That's what he wants. He doesn't want a Western-styled economy whatsoever. He doesn't want other people to acquire wealth and therefore acquire influence. Why? He knows if that happens, he'll be dead. He probably understands histories and attempted coups, which is why he is expert at going outside of his country to even kill family members. So
yeah, he's not going right. to he's not going to give up his line of defense ever because and this is again as you just mentioned he has a record, a very harsh record and his father did too, of protecting his power. He's willing to do that at any level.
My confidence in Trump is that in this case, I will not include Michael Cohen in this discussion, but in this case, I believe he hired the right people. He has John Bolton,
yes.
He has Mike Pompeo.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what gives right. me the more confidence.
Yeah. No, that's a great point, I think.
In this, then,
yeah.
than any confidence of Michael Cohen as his former attorney.
Yeah.
I believe he got it right when he put Bolton in there and when he got Pompeo in there. And I believe that that's where we're going to find out what the pathway is going to be. And as you and I have always stated, I don't expect that North Korea is going to denuclearize. I just don't see that happening. What I expect out of this, and the president left it open last year saying, maybe I'll go too far and I'll have to come back and tell you people I went too far, you know, and that's,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, or this wasn't going to work, or I was too optimistic or whatever. But the fact is, I'm going to try. Well, you do try because you want to see how far Kim Jong-un will go. And then when you realize he's not going to negotiate, then you can have a hardline policy towards North Korea. And you can bring people with you. You can bring other countries with you. And you can make your stand that, we tried, we did it, he doesn't want a deal. And that's what each new administration has to do. It's whether you get fooled into giving them a tremendous amount of aid to enable Kim Jong-un to become more powerful. That's what you don't want, and that is the fear of the president's critics, and I'm talking about conservative fear, is that by being too friendly and being too open and being too willing to concede to get to that point of where you can then be a hardliner, people are afraid you won't become that hardliner. With John Bolton, if he follows the advice of John Bolton, I believe if Kim Jong-un will not denuclearize, I believe that that will be Bolton's advice to him. Now, Bolton has said many times, look, I don't set policy. I just tell the president what I think. He can follow it or he doesn't have to follow it. But I believe that somebody like a Bolton and a Pompeo, that would be their advice to the president. Whether he follows it or not, we don't know, because on North Korea, nothing really has been accomplished yet when it comes to the denuclearization of North Korea. I mean, we're still baby steps into it a year on, which is making a lot of people nervous. A lot of conservatives nervous, saying, uh-oh, where's the president going to go here on this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we're going to see, maybe I'm just hoping we're going to see, a continuation of what we have experienced over the last, how long has it been now? A couple of months, where the president has really found some stability, consistency in tone.
In tone and in messaging, yes, he has.
And
for the most part.
Yeah, it's still...
For him.
Exactly. He hasn't changed as a person.
Right.
We'll put that little disclaimer out there, the asterisk. But I think the idea is that everything else that is in play right now that is working for the president, the damage that I believe the Democrats are doing to themselves, that the far left, and we said it, and we're not even into the fall of 2019. Look how far it's come just in the last few weeks. They were struggling to defend Governor Northam in Virginia on infanticide. And then a few weeks later, they're voting for it. These things that work for the president, border security, the majority of American people are on board and want better border security. The wall thing hasn't become this huge... It really hasn't become a huge deal. I mean, if you think about where this might have gone for a president like this and all of the negative stuff that the trolls have put out there about a number of issues, the wall has actually gained more support along the way.
Yes.
And you
saw the polling of independents when it comes to agreeing with the president on illegal immigration and immigration issues.
Yeah. And that's that key. Those people in the middle, You've been saying it for years. Those are the people that get you elected. That's how you get over the top. And that's what everybody, that's why these Democrats, that's why you have Kamala Harris saying, oh, yeah, I'm not a socialist. She's trying. Here's the interesting thing. Mm-hmm. We're not even to the official primary season yet, and she's already trying to be centered. They normally don't do that until right before convention next summer, where they try and move to the center a bit. You know, obviously, she's not going to get away with it in today's world. They can try that all day long. They're not going to get away with it. But then Ocasio-Cortez, the Green New Deal, all of these things right now that are working for the president because they're damaging to the Democrats. Add on top of that, if we're believing, you know, what's coming out right now, and I think just through the actions of what's going on with China and dealing with the trade situation there, you can easily come to the conclusion, even though the president has been known to change his mind on the fly and create policy on the fly, seemingly, it looks like a deal is going to be done there. That is going to be put to bed. You were saying during the pre-show meeting, but it really isn't much change than before. Maybe they'll come away with China buying a few more things, but in terms of trade balance, that's not going to happen.
There's the coming out of the White House that, you know, the president may call it fake news, but that the president wants the deal done with China. And apparently, and I don't know whether it's Kudlow against the protectionists in, you know, that are trying to do the trade deals right now, whether it's, you know, Lighthizer against Kudlow, I don't know. But the president wants a deal and he wants it now, which some are saying will get him a weaker deal with China. But we have said all along, and I had a conversation with a guy the other day, he said, yeah, but Trump got the trade deal done. I said, not the trade deal that he promised in the campaign.
Right.
He didn't get the trade deal done with Canada and Mexico that was going to even out that's what he promised. I mean, that was the initial, but I'm happy he didn't get that. Mm-hmm. I'm happy. I mean, this makes me support the president more that he didn't get it. But where he goes with China, which I believe he had much more, what do you want to call it? I think a morality on trade morality on his side with China.
He
does face the fact that if he doesn't get a deal which makes it so China abides by the WTO, that China doesn't subsidize their businesses, and it's more than just the token, okay, we're going to pay on soybeans, we're going to buy more. Okay, that's enough. That's enough of the deal. Let's move on from there, where you get the, especially on China, I think is where he's vulnerable more to his base. If he doesn't get it. But you and I said this all along. You're not going to see the major tariffs that he proposed. He said he loves tariffs. He doesn't love tariffs right now. He realizes he's gotten the call from the South Dakota governor, the Republican state, you're killing us. He, believe me, his economic people are telling him farm bankruptcies are up to the highest level that they've been in a decade now. He's hearing all this stuff. And he understands he's got to have a great economy going into 2020. And I don't believe he wants to take any chances. So it's like, okay, let's just get this deal done.
And I think that's right. And I think that especially when you had in 2016, Trump saying, look, you've got to support ethanol subsidies if you want to win Iowa. Now, ultimately, he didn't win Iowa. Ted Cruz did. But the point being is that he knows you've got to. The Farm Belt is one of those you know, demographics. He's really going, those states where that's number one industry means so many families, even if they're not farming, they're affected indirectly because of the economy is supported by farming.
She was blunt. She said, look, I understand what you're doing with China, but you're devastating the South Dakota economy because
right.
everything is agriculture
right.
there.
Yeah. And
related to it.
And so there's not only does he have to fix that problem, but he's going to have to go back. There's going to have to be some repairing there that I think is going to be, could be some long lasting damage. I don't know to what extent, but there's no doubt there's political damage right there, because if bankruptcies are at a 10-year high, and they're suffering, and the economies in those states are suffering as a result of those tariffs, that's directly on the president.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. We'll get to your calls and comments coming up following the top of the hour and all the different topics that we have brought up, and also continue with. I'm sorry, we got into an intense conversation here during the break. The show never stops. Mm. Can the Democrats defend any major issue right now? We're talking issue, not politics. Actually, the substance of the actual issues. New polling on the presidential election. If Howard Schultz did run, would that help the president? And how much would it help the president? And also the allegation that CNN failed, this is my favorite, to disclose Democratic Party ties of questionnaires at the Bernie Sanders town hall meeting, which means these were Democrat operatives who were not told to Bernie Sanders that they were actually Democrat operatives. Mm. They were promoted, and we will tell you what they were promoted as. They were promoted as something else. Now, the reason we bring that up is, remember back in the primary of 2016?
Oh, yeah.
Remember the whole CNN thing? Yeah. Remember the
what's interesting
Donna
is
Shalala thing?
Still today, they're talking about the, you know, the emails, the hacked emails from the DNC. The left is making that all about Trump. They never once talk about the content of what was in the emails and all of the, I mean, they completely ignore that at every turn and what those emails actually showed. Well, the Bernie supporters, remember, when it came to the big get-together in the summer at the convention, they were angry, and I'm wondering if they're going to be angry when this report gets wider, as it will in the next couple of days.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Thank you so much for being here this morning.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Now, you and I both a little under the weather, but I'm feeling good right now. I mean, it's like the more I talk, the better I feel, and my throat and voice is feeling better than it has all day.
Good.
Maybe because the cold medicine is working, but it's not the nighttime cold medicine, so I don't expect to get drowsy.
Yeah, okay.
It says, because the nighttime stuff says don't operate machinery. Mm. Is this machinery?
No. Your car is, though.
Well, I'm on the day stuff.
And don't rage against the machinery.
I didn't take it until I got here.
Yeah. It's the daytime cold medicine.
By the way,
you're like a rebel. You're taking daytime cold medicine at night.
Well, this is the first shift.
It is.
This isn't third shift. This is the first shift.
But it's not daytime.
Well, the day begins when our show does.
Okay. Oh, that's right, it does. I mean, yes, you're right.
Man, I had it was fun yesterday on social media because the whole track star, the transgender, the two high school students that are number one, then there came another story out yesterday that about the biological man who's winning all of the college races now. And here it is. biological male is top-ranked NCAA women's track star. One of the fastest sprinters in NCAA women's track is a biological male who identifies as a transgender woman. Franklin Pierce University runner CeCe Toepfler competed on the men's track team in early 2018 before switching to the women's team. Toepfler has dominated the NCAA Division II competition and led the women's team into the top 25 for the first time ever. This is another topic that the left actually won't talk about. But I just had fun on social media yesterday. All I have to say is this statement. Martina Navratilova, the oppressor.
Right.
That's all I have to say. If you want to know how far whack the left has gone, think about that. You need to say no more that the LGBTQ now believes Martina Navratilova is the oppressor.
With her hate speech and such.
With her hate speech and all of her phobias.
Yes. She's very phobic.
She's very phobic. She has no love.
All right, I had to throw that in there. Tennis. That was really bad. Okay. That wasn't even. That. See, I'm sick. That isn't up to par with our normal humorous crap.
Yeah. That funny junk, whatever it is. That's
the stuff that we have to throw in
there. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah.
New 2020 poll. Trump re-election likely if Schultz runs. New national survey testing the popularity of center-left independent presidential bid. Like that of former Starbucks chief Howard Schultz, would rob enough votes from the Democratic nominee to help President Trump win a second term. For every Republican who defected to a third-party candidate, five Democrats would switch. In the end, according to the latest poll from the Wasson Center for Public Policy at Christopher Newport University, it would result in Trump taking 34% of the 2020 vote, the Democrat 32%, the Independent 16%. So there you go.
And we knew that. That's no stretch. Remember, they're already trolling him, the liberals. Was that a book signing, wasn't it? When someone showed up and they were trolling him saying, with a bunch of expletives, of course, you'll help Trump get reelected. Don't you dare run. You know, you and I have been throwing around because somebody, I forget which Democrat said it the other day. Somebody in the House said that Bernie should not run as a Democrat. He should run as an independent. He should not seek the nomination for the party. And I'm like, I'm with you on that. Because I think if Bernie ran as an independent, he would be the much bigger spoiler, I believe. I don't know that Schultz would get what Bernie would get.
I like what Schultz said, though.
Hmm.
When Schultz came back and said, wait a minute, I'm not the spoiler. You're Democrat candidates that are whacked, that have all these nutty ideas. They're the spoiler. That's why I've got to run.
Well, it was Jill Stein's fault last time, remember? In 2016, if she hadn't run, look, you always account for that. If you have a great candidate, then they'll win.
Is that next for the Democrats that we can only have two candidates for president?
Right.
We have to put that in the Constitution.
Yeah, exactly. And then the states will say that they'll ignore all of the third party, Green Party candidates. And yeah, absolutely.
That'll be next.
We're not going to have the spoiler. We're going to change the system. Yeah, you're going to change the system right up to the point that it burns you.
The president in Vietnam, the summit taking place today. Let's head to with North Korea. Dictator.
Right.
Kim Jong-un.
Yeah. The president, they had a lunch and at a gathering, and the president is back at his hotel, and he'll stay there for several hours until the meeting with Kim Jong-un.
Let's go to Tom in Detroit about that. Tom, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys.
I just wanted to say, I don't think the American people are too worried about Rocket Man anymore. I think Donald Trump did the job of him taking down his launch pads, because he was shooting those missiles over Japan, and we were worried about an EMP, an electromagnetic pulse, that he would be able to blow something up over the United States and knock out our electrical system. And I think we're not worried about that now, because he cannot, it looks like he doesn't have the capability to launch those rockets anymore, and he hasn't been.
Well,
he hasn't been testing.
No, he hasn't been testing the missiles, but do a quick Google search about the missile program right now. And over since the, just Google it and see every single major news agency, including Fox News, talking about the worrying about the, and specifically a secret site where they now have developed the ICBMs that can reach the United States right now, and the fear. And every news agency has been reporting it. You can go back and see Bolton talking about last summer, I think as recently as last September, about the fact that, look, they could disassemble all these things in a year, but they're not disassembling it. They haven't disassembled the missile program there. As to America not worried about it, the president's worried about it, John Bolton's worried about it, Mike Pompeo was worried about it.
Yes. And I think when you
that's why they're there.
Listen to Pompeo and Bolton. Those are the ones where, those are the two especially that will, and have, as you pointed out, especially with Bolton, and I think Pompeo has answered questions on this. There's no confidence essentially right now that they have done much of anything. You can dismantle this and that in terms of stockpiling weapons and development. There's no confidence that it has really even slowed down. So, nothing effectively has happened except for the pause in testing, which could change tomorrow.
Right.
The day, it could change the day after the summit.
Fox News from beginning of August last year, North Korea possibly constructing new ICBMs, missile program moving on business as usual, an official says. I can find other news items that are reporting the same thing as Fox, but people will get that's fake news. You can find it in the Washington Post, New York Times. Everybody reported this. Conservative websites did the same thing. But North Korea is possibly constructing new intercontinental ballistic missiles and moving on with business as usual for its missile program, an official told Fox News, despite Kim Jong-un's claim to halt weapon production and President Trump's reassurance that the Hermit Kingdom is no longer a nuclear threat. It's business as usual, an official with knowledge of the latest intelligence assessment on North Korea told Fox News on Tuesday. In fact, the maps were out late summer and fall of last year, all the different maps of where they fear they're producing new intercontinental ballistic missiles that can reach the United States. So they may not be testing them, but the production, they may not be testing them by shooting them. But there is the belief within the Trump administration. So to believe that they have, torn down their missile program is absolutely untrue. I don't know anybody who is stating that in the government. No one.
Right. Yeah. You can cross your fingers and hope. Even the president last year after the summit telling the international media, look, a year from now, we can look back at this and we might look back and say, it was a complete failure. And so, but I don't know anybody that's promoting the fact, other than the fact that he's paused testing for now, that there's been any real progress. And I don't expect a Kim Jong-un to dismantle weapons and do away with his nukes. I don't know if they're to speak and honestly and tell you that. I don't know anybody that would say that in their right mind. That would say he's, yes, we have full confidence he's going to do away
with all of his nukes. He's demonstrated very clearly what he's willing to do to maintain his power, killing his family members in order to maintain power. Sound like a guy who's going to give up his weapons? No. He'll build a facade in terms of making it look better appearance-wise as to the people of North Korea that are suffering as a result of his dictatorship. But he's, other than that, there's not much that's going to change about a Kim Jong-un. I hope he doesn't lob any missiles. I hope he doesn't start a war.
Well, again, you go in with expectations especially the president, you're going to go in with expectations. There's a political part of it that you're promoting that we're going to solve this problem. You and I looked at this from the very beginning and said, look, here's what the goal is. The goal is to find out what the mindset of Kim Jong-un is.
Mm-hmm.
Can you actually deal with him? If you can't, then you become a hardliner. That's the best that you can do with the United States. You do whatever you can. You attempt to negotiate. You show the whole world you're willing to negotiate. And then when you can't, then you keep your allies appraised, especially in Asia. You keep your allies appraised to exactly what's going on. You let them know what's going on. And then when you can't strike a deal with them, that's when you, with all of your allies worldwide, that's where you then clamp down. And you do whatever you need to do at that particular point. But it's the knowledge that you're actually getting. I have never expected that Kim Jong-un is going to give up his missile program and denuclearize.
Right.
Never. I've never thought that's going to happen. I've never thought that he wants a Western-style economy. So if he can get that Western-style economy, he'll give up everything. Because he knows he's dead if he does that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not going to happen. So what is it? What's the goal of the United States? It's to find out whether you can use the carrot to get him. And you also need to do that. You've got to present it on the stage, especially to the allies, that sorry, they're so wimpy, that you've got to present the fact that we've given him the carrot, he's taken the carrot and thrown it back in our face. And so he can't do it. We saw what he was going to do, or you attempt that. There's that, and there's the other thing that I'm afraid of the most, which is do what all the other previous presidents have done, which is to give aid, to pretend that we're doing something, but we're really doing nothing, and he becomes a nuclear power.
Yeah.
Which has happened, what, to every single state that's become a nuclear power, that the United States has pretended that we're playing tough, and then they end up becoming a nuclear power and we accept it. Mm-hmm. And then it's, okay, fine, you've got it. If you misuse it, we blow you to bits. That's basically what the message is. I know it's blunt, but that's what the message will be probably in this case, too. All right, we can't stop you. If you act up at all, we will take you out. It's that simple.
Right. If we see an imminent threat,
yep,
we'll act. And that's likely the heart of the talks, likely was a big part of the message between Pompeo and Kim Jong-un when they sat down.
If Kim Jong-un doesn't move, I don't know how the talks remain friendly. If they remain friendly and positive and the president walks away from this friendly and positive that we're making progress, to me, that's a danger sign that we're getting nowhere.
Right.
Because yeah. As of this moment, except you've got him to see, he's not shooting them anymore, has been pointed out by many military experts. Mm-hmm. Well, you can go a period of time of not actually shooting off the intercontinental ballistic missiles and still continuing the advancement of the missile program.
Right.
And your nuclear program. That doesn't stop that at all. In fact, what you do is you buy time to do the other things while the more symbolic act of firing off the missile, even though you do want to test the missiles, but firing them all the time is also a show of power. Well, we can pull back on that a little bit and buy time to do what we wish to do, which is buy time to become a major nuclear power and get the rest of the free world to think that they're helping to moderate us into a country that is reasonable, and so they continue to give us aid to move to our desired goal.
Yes, it will all be a facade.
And that's actually what's happened, in my opinion, over the last 25 years with other presidential administrations.
Yes.
That's what I would like to see stopped. That's what I expect. I've never expected that Trump could pull a rabbit out of his hat on this one. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
Here's your forecast.
Most of the South that saw all that heavy rain last week will be under sunshine today, but a good portion of the South remains under the threat of some severe thunderstorms. South Texas over through Louisiana and portions of I-10 in through the Florida Panhandle will all experience continued rains today, but fortunately, we'll see the heaviest parts of the storm remain around I-10. And where that moist air meets up with cold air from the north, look for potential icing today from North Texas in through portions of western Oklahoma, parts of Kansas, northern Missouri, eastern Iowa, and northern Illinois. Shaping up to be one of the snowiest months on record for the Pacific Northwest. Portions of I-84 through Oregon will continue to see heavy amounts of snow today. Heavy snow on I-15, Helena to Salt Lake City. And in California, rain on I-5 from San Diego to San Francisco. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio, I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE, if you'd like to get in. Interesting story out yesterday about the people that ask questions to Bernie Sanders at his town hall meeting. We'll get to that, plus more of the president in North Korea coming up.
They've got the goods. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning. The president of North Korea. We're going to a few calls on that. Let's go to William in Rockford, Illinois. William, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Well, thank you. I'm out here outside in Rockford in one of the coldest winters. I think you can relate to that.
Yes.
Anyways, what I'm seeing is that the North Koreans and the Vietnamese are playing to Trump's vanity. There's something on Twitter, if you saw it, there's a picture of Air Force One and the Vietnamese Honor Guard. And the lettering somebody put on there said, respect. Well, I think that they have Trump's number where, for Trump, the art of the deal is winning. Remember before the election, right? Saturday Night Live skit, winning. It's nothing but winning. And I think that's paramount in Trump's mind, sometimes to the detriment of ours and the world's best interest. And I spent a year in Korea and kind of got to know how the North Koreans are. They've never kept any promise they've ever made.
Oh, yeah, without question. I'm assuming you were in South Korea, though, not North Korea.
I was actually in North Korea. Oh, yeah, I was in North Korea. At Panmunjom, the peace village, in the one building, you can go over the North Korean side.
One
of their tunnels.
Okay.
All right, okay. Thank you.
All right, but you weren't living in North Korea. Everybody wishes to psychoanalyze. We don't try to do that on this show. Of course, you have both intelligence agencies analyzing leaders, and the United States intelligence does the exact same thing, and tells the president, this is what we believe the makeup of Kim Jong-un is. Say these things to him. I guarantee it happens whenever you deal with a foreign leader like a Kim Jong-un. Here's what they're about. You get briefed on it all the time. Here's their personality. Here's what to do. And I'm sure Kim Jong-un will look at a President Trump and say, I think that I can manipulate him that way. That is a given. What we're looking for is results. When it comes to actually Vietnam and going into Vietnam and seeing respect, this is a huge thing for Vietnam. They do believe, they look at this with an immense amount of pride that, wait a minute, we're the country that's maybe brokering a peace agreement between North Korea and the United States. It raises their level of credibility. So I don't put as much into the greeting that the Vietnamese gave to the president as maybe you do as to their motivations behind it.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure the Vietnamese are not involved. I don't have any evidence that they're involved in colluding with the North Korean government to try to manipulate the president into a deal by how they greet him when he lands in Vietnam. That goes beyond what I am willing to accept. Okay, that goes beyond what I'm willing to accept. It's just a celebration because you're holding this summit in our country, and this raises our level in the world.
You're hosting a summit. You're looking to shine on the world stage. End of story.
Right. We said this before. Most presidents have a extremely large ego.
Yes.
In order to get to that position, you sort of need it. Sort of like you see most quarterbacks have a very large ego.
Yes.
Unlike other professions like talk show host, where
No ego. None.
Pure logic and intelligence. Eric.
And beauty.
I sit here with Eric all the time. Beauty and very Spock-like.
Yes. Eric, mainly around the ears, but
yes. Yeah. Eric off the air, I call him Mr. Spock.
Yes.
Because he is just pure logic, no emotion.
Right, none. I'm the station that cares.
See, your logic dictates that you must say that.
Right. That's only logical. No ego.
So again,
but enough about us. Let's talk more about us.
We'll talk about negotiating tactics and where you may go, but to try to psychoanalyze the president and Kim Jong-un, I don't believe I don't know if anybody's qualified to make an assessment on that, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
To sit there and delve and say, and we used to say this about people, say the motivation of Obama. And we say, look, I can't even get into Obama's head. I can't tell you why he's doing something. I can just tell you that what he's doing is wrong. Now, I can speculate maybe on some motivation. It's like Ocasio-Cortez. I can't tell you precisely what goes on in that mind of hers. I don't know if anybody does. I can. I mean, the furthest that, you know, I'm willing to go, at least with somebody like her, is I look at her and I say, you see the confidence of, there is a confidence in her cluelessness. She is clueless. And I base that not on being able to analyze her psychologically. It's just the substance of what she says. What comes out of her mouth shows she's clueless as to how the world actually runs. Her motivation behind that, I can't tell you. I don't know how much of it is ego. I don't know how much of it is false self-esteem. I can't tell you that. I will say that she is the perfect stereotype of the bad millennial. By the way, there are many good millennials out there. That's why I say the stereotype of the bad millennial. And she is also the perfect stereotype of a person who has that confident cluelessness. The more clueless they are, the more they enter the debate with a confidence that shouldn't be there.
Yes. It is a disproportionate amount of confidence.
Well, it's
disproportionate to the level of intelligence.
Look, and any person going from the, I was in radio. I was a music DJ for 6 years?
Yeah, I used to be in radio.
I was a music DJ, okay? Mm. And one day the owner says you're going to be a talk radio host. I think for 2 years on the air, I said, you're a temporary talk show host. I had no confidence at all whatsoever in giving my opinion. I had opinions. I had no confidence at all of giving them in public. And I look at that for me and then look at her and see somebody who is younger than I was at that time and the absolute confidence that she has in her opinions, and I look back at me to when I became a talk radio host at 34. And I actually believe at that time my experience in understanding the world is much greater than hers. I was still scared to death to give my opinion on public because I wasn't sure. I'd never debated with anybody in public. I'd never gone into the arena of ideas, and I was scared like you can't believe that somebody could catch me on something that I was so wrong on. And I would have felt shamed if they did so. I believe that is more of a normal reaction from a person who is not raised with fake self-esteem, that my reaction was more like the average person, that, oh, I'm not really sure, so I'm not going to argue this. The confidence that she has in her cluelessness, I do look at and say, is that because we told that generation, oh, you're special just because you are. Your opinion is just as worthwhile as anybody else's. Well, no, it's not.
And your opinion can change the facts.
Your opinion can change the facts. And so, but that's about, if I get into any psychological, you know, analyzing of someone, that's, you know, that's really, that is to the extent of it. When I hear politicians talking, and I'm thinking to myself, when I became a talk show host, I'd never say that because you can blow so many holes through that. And that's what I was always thinking, Eric, and I know you do the same thing. Mm-hmm. You're always thinking, especially when the first couple of years of being a talk show host, you got to make sure you examine your opinion from every single side. Because as we've told you before, that I've done this, it'll be 30 years come October. So we know when those that are opposed to your opinion, when they see just a tiny opening, when they think they have anything, man, they just run through that because they think they've got you. I always thought that way. I always thought if I don't have my ducks in a row, they're going to get me. And that's frightening. It really is. And it makes you more careful, and it makes you want to study, and it makes you want to, once I finally decided after about 3 or 4 years of doing this, oh, okay, I'm sort of getting the hang of it. Maybe I'd like doing it. And now realizing it's the best job you could possibly have. But I think that process of going through that is necessary because it makes you a better debater. It makes you better actually become more knowledgeable. And the fact is you have to be more willing to learn. And what I sense with her is she believes she knows it all. And as Dad said, Dad was right. She got a title and she believes she got an infusion of brains. Or she was elected because people said, you're right on everything. You really know how the world runs. Mm-hmm. Because she has this confidence of her cluelessness, which is just, it's impressive but dangerous.
Well, it is, because especially when she is a lawmaker.
Yes, yes.
And we talk about that. Everybody, had they in 2007... had there been a lot of discussion about the interview that the San Francisco Chronicle did with then, what, had he even announced? I think he did, yeah. candidate Obama. Under my plan of cap and trade, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket. That was one of those, I would call that, in modern day terms, modern day, that was so 12 years ago. I would call that an Ocasio-Cortez type moment, except it was a very deliberate plan that he talked about openly. Still today, every once in a while, I'll run into somebody and that'll come up in discussion. Well, he never actually said that, did he? I have to YouTube it for him. Because when we talk about the Green New Deal or any of these other massive plans, you have to look at something and go back to Obama. Electricity rates will necessarily skyrocket. By the end of the discussion, I will bankrupt the coal industry. And here we are. It happened.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Look, and when you do talk to world leaders, just to address the last caller again, you do at times have to go farther than you might actually would if it was just, you know, a business deal. When you're on the world stage, there's a certain way that you wish to negotiate, not only with the person that you're negotiating, but with the entire world that's watching you negotiate. Hmm. And so one of the things that you would want to set the table for as a president is to be as friendly as you possibly can with the other world leaders that you meet, no matter how bad they are. And well, so, like, yeah. I said, I give Trump the benefit of the doubt on this. He was upfront early on last year. End of May, early June, when they had the Singapore summit. Mm-hmm. And he said, look, I might be wrong in a year.
Right.
We said, well, yeah, well, the whole point is not that you're going to get them, you think you're going to get them to denuclearize or stop their missile program. It's to find out what he is about. And then at a point where you finally come to a decision, all right, they are BSing us, and then you've got to play hardball with them from that point on. And you've got to find that out, and each president has to do that.
Right.
Each new administration.
Well, because you're going to have to play out these diplomatic options all the way through. And in this case, you're doing something, first of all, starting last year, that was unprecedented. So in starting there, you're kind of rolling things back a little bit, going, okay, let's clear the table, clear the air, let's all sit down with smiles.
Yes.
When
yes,
both sides yes, right. fully understand what's going on, there's no doubt. Kim Jong-un, I guarantee you, Kim Jong-un knows, given especially who the Secretary of State is and his former role.
And his national security advisor.
Yep, and yeah. He knows that we know what he's up to.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.